The Spinoff Podcast Network. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q Quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
The Fold is brought to you by oOh!media, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. No mai, hoki mai, kia The Fold, e mihi nei, ko Duncan Greve, tōku ingoa. My guest today is Alec Kieft, who, I'm guessing you haven't heard of him, but this dude might have made like the biggest cultural export from New Zealand, or one of them certainly, in the last like 5 years. He's a developer for a platform called Roblox, which again, you might be only like grazingly familiar with that's existence, but Roblox is probably the single most powerful cultural force for kids now. I don't think that's hyperbole. It's just, it has become a massive part of where sort of preteens, like he described the core of it as sort of 8 to 12 year olds, where they play, interact, and kind of live in a lot of ways. I mean, I happen to have, I got a 10 and a 14 year old daughter, so one who's kind of aged out of Roblox a bit, one who's dead center of the demo. So I've got a familiarity with the culture of it. And anyone who's listening who has kids that age probably already knows what it is. Which he explains better than I can, but the analogy he uses is that it's like YouTube for gaming, and basically it's a platform where you can build and develop games. There are hundreds of thousands of them, and more being made all the time. And an algorithm serves them to you. You can play them, and a lot of the time, like certainly with my kids, they'll be playing the game while having Discord running in the side to do sort of audio and text-based chatting, both amongst school friends and amongst strangers all over the world. And to some people, this sounds probably kind of dystopian, but we try and look at it as parents, and certainly I think that the appropriate way to view it is as an extension or a virtual version of what we would previously have done, you know, in backyards and on streets as kids. This is just where it's happening now, and you kind of can't fight the irresistible nature of it. Alec was one of those kids. Like 2009, he starts playing on Roblox, and it just kind of gets him. And a few years later, he, you know, starts kind of, you know, messing around with developing his own games. A few years after that, he makes a game called Break-In, which is just become an absolute phenomenon on there. You know, he's repeats some statistics that describe its scale, and they're so big as to seem almost unimaginable, but they sort of express just how wildly popular this thing is. And, you know, what I wanted, I should say, I got the tip to speak to him through Hal Crawford, the former head of News Hub, who sort of came across Alec somehow and has basically always been on at me, just like, this dude knows about something that's really important that you and your listeners just don't. And this basically is you should consider this episode a passport to the world of Roblox, this thing that's absolutely enormous and yet most of us are barely aware of and don't even see. But it feels like a window into where humanity is going. I really don't think that's overstating it. Certainly, and we discussed this, it's the best expression of what people are trying to make happen with the metaverse that's currently functioning. And yeah, there's just so much insight in it. Like, Alec works full-time on this thing and is a very healthy living through this sort of revenue share. And we talk a lot about the business side of it too. But, you know, if you're working in media or in communications, you know, that's the audience of this pod, so I assume that's most of you. There are whole spheres of what we can consider media that we barely think about or talk about that are actually bigger, you know, than things that are abiding obsessions that are sort of very present in mind. You know, Roblox might be as big as the music industry in some respects. Like it's just enormous in terms of its scale and reach and the engaged minutes, and particularly for children. Like I know that, for example, with our TV networks and with New Zealand On Air, we spend a lot of time, how do we reach tamariki? Like this is a big abiding obsession. And where have they gone? They're on Roblox. So they're on YouTube, they're on TikTok and so on, obviously. But the creative possibilities and the sense of play, he talks a lot about that everything has to be fine in Roblox because of who its audience is. And it's a really kind of sweet vision of it that he sells. So honestly, this one has been one of my favorite episodes in a long time. There's just a lot in it about Roblox and about where sort of entertainment, I suppose, in a broad sense, where media is going in some respects. So this is Alec Kieft, Roblox developer on The Fold. Kia ora, Alec. Welcome to The Fold.
Thank you very much.
I was wondering if you could start by telling me a bit about yourself, like where you grew up and how you got into making games in the first place.
Yeah. So I grew up Kapiti Coast, so that's just north of Wellington. I got into the game industry by first of all playing Roblox. So do I need to explain Roblox? Or?
Yeah, I've got a whole question dedicated to that because I reckon you should assume almost zero baseline knowledge.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, Roblox is a platform for children's video games, although they're aging up currently, so I guess just video games in general, but primarily the audience is going to be kids in between the ages of maybe like 8 and 12, primarily. And so you can think of it sort of like how YouTube is a platform for videos. Roblox is a platform for children's video games. So you have a whole lot of different creators working on it, and they're all sort of making their own mini projects, and anyone can jump on and just publish a game. Like there's no like green lighting like some of the more sort of professional platforms do. You can just hop on and a 14-year-old can create something, and that could explode in popularity and make them very wealthy or very popular. So when I first started, though, I played Roblox back in would have been year 8. So back in primary school is when I started. And back then Roblox was not big at all. Like it was a tiny platform.
When roughly would this have been like?
Oh, yeah, sorry. That would have been 2009, I think, is when I started, yeah. So yeah, Roblox was this unheard of platform. My math exchange teacher thought it was a math game. It wasn't a math game, so that's how I found it, actually, is because she had us all play it and we just got hooked on it and spent lunchtimes playing it. And it was 2014 is when I first started sort of trying to make little games. I think at the time they had just introduced earning real money for if your game got popular and people were buying things in it. So I played for many years just sort of at school with my friends. Everything's multiplayer. Roblox is a primarily multiplayer platform, so you're playing with other people, including strangers, mostly strangers. Yeah, and I just tried to make a game based on one that I had enjoyed playing, and it got really successful. It got to the number one game, which at the time wasn't an impressive feat at all because there was just trash on the platform, really, so anything even remotely interesting would just shoot up to the number one spot. It became sort of a passion of mine. Throughout college, I would do it as a hobby. I would earn enough money. I'd earn, as much as someone with just a regular supermarket job would earn. But I absolutely loved what I was doing. And there was potential to earn more even back then. But then over the sort of just a bit before COVID and then during COVID, the platform exploded in popularity and sort of became what it is today, which is this humongous gaming platform with engagement that rivals, TikTok and like Twitter and YouTube and everything. But yeah, 2014 is when I started, still doing it. Now it's, there are companies with, 50, 100 employees making Roblox games. Back, obviously, when I started, that would never have been the case.
So when you started, did you have an inkling that this might develop into? Like, it's a full, more than a full-time job for you now, right? And
yeah.
You know, if you want, you could do this forever, so, yeah. So it feels.
Yeah.
Was it a hobby, or did you sort of have a sort of in the back of your mind, well, if this goes really well, it could become what it has eventually become for you?
Yeah, I'd say it was definitely a hobby, because sort of like back when I started, only the top guys who were just very driven and worked year round, they were earning like barely, well, they were earning, you know, good salaries. So it didn't really seem like a feasible career path. And then even when I finished university, and I had a few hit games under my belt and I'd earned like substantial money, I still was planning to go. I studied computer science and statistics at Vic. And so I planned after that to try get a sort of an entry level programming job. That was always the plan. But then I thought I'd just give Roblox one more crack, and that's when I made my biggest game. So that allowed me to sort of continue doing it. So yeah, I guess the answer is I never planned on it being a full-time thing.
So tell me about, so your life changes with Break-In is the game we're talking about, right? Tell me about the sort of financial model. I want to talk about Break-In and about the games and so on, but I think it's worth sort of, for a lot of people, it's like, how do you make money in this sort of abstracted space, especially with kids aren't notorious for having heaps of money.
Yes.
So their parents tend to have some and less if their kids are Roblox fans. Yeah, so explain like the rev share, how within your games money is spent and therefore income is generated for you.
Yeah, so it's similar to a mobile game, like a free-to-play mobile game that has microtransactions in it. So that's the model, basically. Everything, well, yeah, like 99% of Roblox games are free-to-play. And then inside the game, there'll be things you can purchase with a premium currency called Robux. And Robux, you may have heard of, it's you spend real money, you get it on your account. Kids can use that to buy virtual accessories just on the platform, or they can spend it within their favorite game. And that's the things they buy in those games are isolated to that game. So my game is a story-based game where you play as certain roles. And I have a couple of roles locked behind a paywall. Like you can be a policeman and you have to use Robux, which, you know, is real, you know, real money to unlock that role. Other games is like loot boxes and things like that. If you're unfamiliar, a loot box is a sort of like a present that holds 15 potential items with varying degrees of rarity. So there might be a 1% chance to get the super rare item. And so people will unlock these loot boxes over and over and over trying to get the super rare item. And they can, in a lot of games, they can spend money to spend Robux, a game which means, you know, real life money, to purchase coins in the game to buy these loot boxes. So that's another very common way that people will monetize their games.
So, I mean, one of the reasons I'm interested in Roblox is that both I've got 10-year-old and 14-year-old daughters, both of whom either play or have spent a lot of time playing games, including Break-In. And the economy of it's really fascinating. Like, you know, one of them was doing ice skating and really wanted, like, she was playing Brookhaven, I think, or maybe, no, Royal High, and just wanted these ice skates and ended up like trading for them. Like there's a whole economy that happens within it, not just the sort of traditional economy of Robux, but also a kind of a gray economy of trading things.
Like, yeah.
Does that happen within your games? And obviously it's got this relationship with Discord as well. So talk about the sort of ecology of it a bit.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, what you're describing is this is maybe a bit tricky to explain, but there are games within Roblox that sort of are almost like standalone games. You know, things have grown so big now, like Brookhaven, for example, that it's almost transcended Roblox. Like it's as big as any standalone game that I would have played as a kid that wasn't on any platform. You know,
like you're talking about like a Zelda or something. Or
Club Penguin, you're familiar with that, you know. Yeah. So they've gotten so humongous that you can just sort of forget about Roblox as a platform. And just like focus on that game in isolation. And then those games have little ecosystems like you described. So Royal High, which is made by a good friend of mine, so you can like unlock all these extremely rare clothing items, and then you can trade those items and you can get gems and get halos are the really coveted items. And so that is totally within Royal High. There is no there's no impact on any other game on the platform that's totally within that. And there might be another game called Adopt Me, which is one of the, I think it's the second most popular of all time, made by a good friend of mine as well. And that has a similar thing where the whole game is like very trading based. And so you want the best pet and you can trade up for different pets. And those two games are totally, there's no crossover whatsoever. So it could be either of those, but yeah, it's a very common sort of setup in Roblox. Yeah, similar to like, I guess, trading Pokemon cards and things at school, but a virtual version of that, yeah.
It's interesting, right? Because unavoidably when you're describing this, it calls to mind some of what has been conjectured around in terms of the metaverse. And when Mark Zuckerberg changed the name of Facebook to Meta, and when there was all that kind of buzz around it a couple of years ago until AI came along and ate that portion of the sort of brain space, there was a persistent thread that the metaverse already exists and it's called Roblox. You know, that was a response from people. Do you think that conception has merit? And you know, because if you think about what you're describing, it does have some of those characteristics, or is it something that you think about at all?
I'm not like super familiar with all the like discourse about the metaverse and things. I do think that Roblox is definitely a much better representation of that than sort of like a lot of things that people have tried to create to sort of fill that idea of what the metaverse is meant to be. And if I had to make any comment on it, I would say that people have this sort of this maybe shared idea of what the metaverse looks like, where it's this sort of VR world where you can, it's like a theme park and there's this thing to do over here in this grand like castle, and there's you can like teleport to the pyramids in Egypt or whatever. And I think Roblox, the difference is that Roblox is like grounded in just purely what is fun and what people actually want versus like this grand idea of what it should be. So a lot of brands sort of tried to jump on the metaverse trend and sort of came into Roblox and have built these like very fantastical worlds. Like there might be like a Spotify island, and it's this like very grand island with like big piano like walkways that play music as you go over it, and hydro slides and roller coasters. And this, I'm just making things up.
But that is very much the classic kind of conception of this fantasy world. Is someone's idea of what it should be, and yet there's often no one there when they build it.
It's totally, it's just totally empty compared to, I guess, like some crappy Roblox game where you have to run away from a rat or something, you know, like could have a billion plays, and then Spotify Island, which has been built by this team of 30 people, has got zero people on it, because it's just, it's created under, you know, in this image of what a metaverse world should look like, but it isn't what anyone actually wants. So that's sort of that's just like a very naive take, because I don't really know much about like Zuckerberg's vision for the metaverse or anything like that. That's just like sort of how it's sort of appeared in Roblox and how it's like manifested in Roblox is these they look good in a blog post. I think that's probably the purpose of it. And they do look good. Like they're very impressive visually, these worlds. But for me, Roblox, the core of Roblox has always been about, I'm going to go on another side. So Roblox, I think why I love it and why it's so great is like you can make something on the platform, and if it isn't fun, no one's going to play it. Kids are, they're straightforward with their interests. You know, if something is fun, even if it looks like crap, they're going to play it. They'll love it. If something has been hundreds or thousands of hours poured into it by a massive team and looks beautiful and in theory should work, if it's not fun, no one's going to play it. There's no way you can force it up like maybe you can in the app store or something by shoving it down everyone's throats with advertising. Kids, they are very just upfront with their interests. They play what they enjoy. You don't need to have YouTubers or famous people play your game. You don't need to advertise it. If a game is fun, you can be a nobody. You can be some 13-year-old kid or a 16-year-old kid like I was, and it will shoot up the rankings because the game is fun. And that's what I love about the platform. So to sort of have these very like glamorous games being made with all these big brands backing them, but at their core, they're not fun. Yeah, I think that I think that gives me faith in the platform because, yeah, I like that it's still at its core. It's like what works is fun. Yeah.
No, it's a great thesis. You touched on it there. The aesthetics of Roblox are quite interesting to me. And obviously, it's effectively you're composing on someone else's platform, so it's dictated by that to an extent. But it always sort of surprised me. You know, we think of gaming as this sort of linear journey into ever more refined kind of graphics and the Unreal Engine unlocking all kinds of potential in creatively and visually particularly. Mm-hmm. And then you go to Roblox and it's this kind of crazy Lego-ish. A lot of the stuff is super 2D or it's very blocky. It's aesthetically confronting to people who are expecting something else from a modern gaming platform. You know, talk about that and why the sort of how you code for it kind of impacts the look and feel.
I'll tell you a small story. So I have a friend who works on the Roblox platform and he was in charge of sort of upgrading the little Roblox character, which is fairly universal across most games. So originally, back when I first started playing, it was this, you know, little blocky guy with limbs that sort of didn't bend at all. So you're very limited by animations and things like that. And it looked just very sort of, what's the word? It's not very detailed. It looks a bit crappy, you know.
You can say it.
Yeah, yeah. And so he put in all this time and his team put in all this time to make this like bendy avatar. And now they've upgraded again so you can play as, you know, a wolf or a squirrel or an astronaut or all the, and there's all shapes and sizes now. But a lot of the top games on the platform still use the original rigid, crappy avatar still, which is really fascinating. And he's always told me, he said, I'm so annoyed because these games, we asked them, like, why are you using this crappy? We built you this new avatar and it looks so good. Why are you using the old crappy ones? And they said, oh, we don't know. We just like it. And players love it, you know.
I mean, that's culture, right? Like, it gets, it's not, and then that's on some level why Roblox wins, is that it doesn't try and impose presuppose what the kids want. The kids will tell you by what they play.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that visual thing is not off-putting. In fact, it's actually part of what makes it this kind of secret world that works for people.
Absolutely. And the games that are my favorites personally on the platform, even though I would consider myself as someone who I sort of try to flesh out a world and make it very atmospheric, and I think I have good attention to detail and lighting and graphics and things like that, at least more so than some of the real crappy games. But my personal favorites are these games that maybe have like they're clearly made by just someone who didn't have much of an artistic vision, but they really understood what made their game fun and all the little details, like all the little icons and things, which at the end of the day aren't important as long as the player can read them and know what each button does. Yeah, those are the best games. They look kind of shoddy, but they play beautifully. Talked about this a little bit before, but yeah, that's, I think at its core, what I love about Roblox is something can look like crap and just be so incredibly fun. But I think, you know, lately, so maybe in the past like year or 2 years, you've started to see these games come up. There's one called Doors, which is this horror game, and it looks like a non-Roblox game. Really fantastic lighting and attention to detail and materials and everything. And that has sort of, as games like that have sort of shown everyone, hey, we can actually make these really beautiful looking games and still keep the essence of what makes a Roblox game fun. So I think I would like to see more, you know, like detailed, interesting looking games. I don't think necessarily I want Roblox to be this janky looking, like low poly, low detail, washed out lighting platform forever. I think that'll always exist, but I think you're going to start to see some games start to look like Unreal Engine, not to that level, but I think start to get there a little bit at least, and that's cool.
The Fold is brought to you by oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa, with over 4,000 out-of-home advertising sites nationwide across both street furniture and retail centres. I'm super grateful to oMedia for enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
So let's talk about one of your games, like the one that sort of, if you'll pardon the pun, kind of broke out for you and probably changed your life. Tell me about Break-In, about the vision, and because that really has become kind of a phenomenon that's changed your life, right?
Totally, yeah. So Break-In, I had a friend who was working on, he's a brilliantly creative guy called Samson, and he made this new game where it's you and a group of friends go on a camping trip. And it's not, at the time, it was totally unlike anything else on the platform. And he's like one of these developers who's like the most evergreen Roblox developer imaginable. Like, he just has an idea and he understands in his head, I think it'll be fun for me and my friends play this camping, go on a camping trip horror game in Roblox. And so he built it and I played it and I thought, wow, this is like sparked some sort of like idea in my head as well, because it was so much fun and so original. So you sort of just played out through this camping trip story. And I thought, I would like to do my own one of that, but I don't want to do camping. I want to try to do my own thing. So I sort of thought, how can I take his model? And there were a few things about his that I thought I would change this or that about it. So, yeah, I landed on Break-In, which is a story about you're in a house and you're a family. That's the lore, I guess, of the game. So you play as different members of the family. Someone might be the dad with a baseball bat or the mum with a med kit, for example, or a kid. And the story is that the purge is happening. Sort of famous movie franchise, although my game, The Purge, is like not the same as in the movies. It's this group of bad guys with a villain called Scary Larry, and he's not very scary at all. So it's not really a horror game at all, but to a young kid, it might be a little bit freaky.
Yeah.
You have to protect the house. You board up the windows. You fight off the bad guys. At the end, you beat Scary Larry. Sorry to the listeners who might want to play as a spoiler. But very simple. I think the family in a house and having that pressure of like, are the bad guys going to attack us or not? I think that was the key to the game's success. I think that theme really appealed to people. And yeah, it just really took off, totally changed my life, allowed me to continue making Roblox games full time.
Well, what's some data that kind of expresses what taking off means?
Yeah, the numbers like seem a little meaningless because I'll try to think of maybe some of that. So on Roblox, it's been played over 2 billion times now. So I think like 2.2 or 2.3 billion times.
That's number of sessions started by people.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But what's like a more, I can tell you how many individual accounts have played the game. So that might be a sort of more tangible stat. And I think it's at something like, well, the people who have made it to the first boss of the game, which means they've played at least 3/4 of the game, is something in the realm of like, I think it was like 80 million or something people or something.
It's
an insane number. And every time I look at it, I just think, wow, like that's surreal to me, especially because I don't have any, you know, I don't have any younger cousins or nephews or nieces or any sort of just like kids playing Roblox that I know, you know. So it's like I don't get to see this, and just to imagine that there's this enormous number of people out there that have or that are playing or have played my game is like, it's hard to comprehend that, I guess.
Yeah, like that's more than the population of the UK.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, for sure. So, and then like another maybe more tangible number, the top YouTube videos on the game have like 25 to 30 million views on them. So that's maybe a number that is maybe a bit easier to understand.
Do you want to, can we talk about the role of YouTube in the kind of Roblox ecosystem, I guess? Because, you know, as I understand that, that it's pretty huge. There isn't, we were talking about this off air, but there isn't like a media where people go and review games and print or whatever like there is with other cultural forms. Mm-hmm. Like, so a lot of this stuff is litigated on YouTube, right?
Yeah. Yeah, YouTube is, it's very, it's huge, obviously, and it's very competitive. So a lot of the YouTubers are sort of always hunting for the next big thing. Some of them, now games are getting so big that YouTubers just pick a niche. So they might pick one particular game and they can build a career out of just making videos on that one game. Mine is a repetitive story game, so you're not seeing that. But for the YouTubers that sort of play a variety of Roblox content, they're always just looking for something interesting that would be entertaining for a video, and Break-In just was the perfect game for that. The relationship between YouTubers and developers, yeah, it's, you sort of benefit, you both benefit from each other. So the YouTubers will, are always hunting for to be the first to play the next big thing so they can have the biggest video. And then you as a developer, you get like a kickstart from their video, because that will get you like a few thousand players or something in the beginning, which can be really valuable and accelerate the game's growth. So how it would normally look, and this is how it was, I haven't released a game and had to, like every game I've released recently, I've sort of had a lot of hype built already. So I haven't had to sort of release a game with no advertising for a while, or, you know, like from the ground level. But from what I recall, you sort of, you make a game, you got no one playing it. So what you want to first do is just try to get some friends in, or try send it to a YouTuber or a TikToker. TikTok's a new one that sort of people are experimenting with. People are making TikToks of games. And then if your game is really fun, eventually someone will send that to a YouTuber, or it'll, or people send it to their friends who send it to their friends who send it to their friends. And then eventually it might land on a small YouTuber's desk. They'll play it. Another person will see that. They'll play it. And suddenly you've got a small trickle of people coming into the game. That might be enough to get you on the algorithm. Then the algorithm normally carries you up.
So the games are algorithmically served within Roblox?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there advertising? Like, can you pump the algorithm by paying to...
Yeah,
for placement?
You can do that.
But you just don't think that works?
No, I do think it works. I think I haven't had a lot of experience with that. I used to use it a lot, but things have changed a lot since then. Because the last game I've released sort of had a lot of hype behind it, so I didn't have to advertise it. But I think if you're a new developer trying to get a game off the ground, that seems to be the way to do it, just to advertise on the platform, because you just need to get that first. You need to get enough players in the game that the algorithm can pick it up. And I'm not sure what you'd have to spend to get there, unfortunately. But once the algorithm picks it up, then you don't have to do anything. It just carries it the rest of the way.
So can we talk a bit about Roblox, the corporation? This is a publicly listed, like a $50 billion plus kind of business behind it. And you can sort of think, like you said, that YouTube, but for gaming, is an interesting way to think about it. Mm. YouTube does, I think it's a 55-45 in the creators' favor, rev share on advertising.
Yeah.
The in-game currency, which is the kind of equivalent, I suppose, for Roblox, it's like 25-75 in Roblox's favor. Is that correct?
Sort of. So actually, a big portion of that goes to App Store fees. And,
oh, so the Apple tax will take 30%.
They take, is it 30 or?
I think it's 30.
Yeah, so they take quite a bit. And then Roblox takes a lot, the majority chunk for server maintenance. They handle all the networking. They handle all the data storage,
the
and everything like that.
Yeah.
And obviously the Roblox platform, which is what you build the games on, is free. And then we're sort of left with whatever remains, which is, I think it is roughly like 23% or something, but the number, you know, varies depending on who you ask. But yeah, it's a lot lower than other platforms. But I mean, like Roblox, the community sort of goes through waves of being like, we should be like, why can't we get paid a little more? But then Roblox comes back and says, well, we have to pay Apple and Google Play Store, and we have to pay for all, you know, we're trying to build the platform out for you guys. And everyone's like, oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. And I don't know. I've always...
You're at peace with it?
Well, I'm in a weird position, right? Because, and I'm just speaking for myself, but I went from playing the game and being a fan of Roblox. Like I was a, you know, Roblox was like this great, awesome company. And then I transitioned into being someone who does it for work. So it's hard to sort of get out of the mindset of like, I'm just so grateful to be here, you know? Yeah. And I'm earning great money. You know, like I'm so fortunate to be able to do what I do full time. And even though I earn not, you know, like 25 cents on the dollar or whatever it is, I still, I guess, am earning just because of the volume of players. I'm earning a lot, and I just, I don't know, like maybe I'm also not very, you know, like money hungry. I don't have a big studio or anyone that's relying on me, so it's easy for me to just be like, yeah, I'm just quite pleased to sort of to get a little chunk of that. But yeah, I guess like if they were to, I would love it. I would love to get more money. but I don't know. I can't say that I'm too bothered by it.
In terms of the sort of evolution of it sort of started out, you know, it was not, I mean, a lot of people would have been like you, like hobbyists with aspirations to more, but, you know, not having the idea of building a studio or a full kind of business around it. But in much the same way as that the biggest YouTube channels are starting to resemble production companies, it sounds like Roblox, you know, because of the opportunities and revenue that can be built there, it is starting to become kind of professionalized, and there are starting to be sort of studios mm-hmm. building out, which Roblox is actively encouraging.
Yeah.
How have things changed? Because a lot of this, like you referenced before, the pandemic booms, every kid is stuck inside on a screen and Roblox becomes the thing that they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so you have this bomb of interest and usage that probably fundamentally changes what the economic realities of it can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. How has it changed since then from your perspective as someone who's been there from almost the beginning in a way?
Yeah. I'd say Roblox has always been a platform for like the solo developer or the hobbyist developer. So maybe a couple, like two brothers or just one like 17-year-old or someone could, you know, create the smash hit because they have a deep understanding of the platform and sort of just wing it. And that's always sort of been the way that, you know, that people have made Roblox games. It's been these just random kids who have figured it out. Nowadays, you're starting to see big game studios coming from off platform or just people who have raised a bunch of capital and are hiring a bunch of people from within the community. And they sort of have started off by, none of them are like too bad. It's not, I don't want to make them sound terrible. Like they're all just coming in and like trying to milk as much money from the platform as they can. But certainly the easiest, the safest way for them to sort of get a return on their investment is to create games heavily modeled after existing games and ones that tend to be more lucrative. So you're seeing a lot more of those sort of cookie cutter, if a game does well, then other studios will swoop in and sort of just imitate it and maybe stick a brand in there or something like that. And so you're seeing a lot more of the samey sort of games and genres of games that are sort of designed to encourage people to spend money or to have, that sort of thing. But on the other hand, I think because the platform has grown so much, there was a stat that I saw the other day, and I'm not sure if it's true or not, but I think the daily active users on Roblox has almost doubled since the middle of the pandemic to what it is now, which I thought was crazy. I wasn't aware that it had grown so much.
What from what to what?
I can't remember what the numbers are, but I think it's up to like 50 or 60 million or some absurd number like that, daily active users now. Yeah, and you're just seeing like such a high, like such a large quantity of kids that, you know, like me played and then eventually were like, I'll give this a crack and try and make something. And just the sheer volume of that means you're seeing a lot of just like new emerging talent, and still you're seeing these incredibly creative games, and they still are able to shoot up the rankings and become these smash hits. And so these massive game studios, they exist and they're making these games and they're a little bit soulless or whatever, and you know they're not super original, but you're still, as long as there's a place for the solo developer or the kid who just wants to figure it out, I'm happy, and those games still exist, even at a higher quality than they used to be, I would say. Yeah, I guess there's a lot of brand games and things as well, but those, you know, they're there. No one, they exist, but they're not hurting the platform in any way.
This is brands paying to get a game developed as a form of marketing, effectively. But
yeah, some of them are really good. Like there was a Hello Kitty one and a Sonic one that did really well, and they were, you know, not anywhere near the level of some of these really creative and original games that some of the, you know, like a 20-year-old developer might put out just because they're super passionate about a certain weird project. But I think I would have enjoyed playing them as a kid.
Sure. So, like, you are and are going to be making a super healthy living out of being a full-time Roblox dev. And like, I mean, the whole thesis of this chat is this is this invisible thing that's actually massive mm-hmm. and that we should pay attention to. Are there other New Zealanders in your boat? And, you know, like, what is the sort of future, do you think, of it as both a kind of creative, cultural, but also a professional employment type category?
Yeah. In New Zealand, I live with two other Roblox developers, and we've worked together in the past. And they're sort of just able, they're earning a full-time living. They're chipping away at their projects. And then there's one other guy who lives in Nelson, and he's doing really well, and he has a company that employs people and has like a few games now that are sort of ticking along and doing quite well. So I'd say like at the core community that I'm familiar with is probably, yeah, us four. And then there's like a few hobbyist guys here and there that I think like chip away at things but might have jobs on the side, or just people that do it in a more limited capacity.
Well, because you've got to imagine that 60 million or so, whatever the New Zealand's version of that is, on a population basis,
yeah,
there are more youths coming, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
and
sure.
they'll all be kind of trying to create for the platform and, mm-hmm. and dreaming of what you have in a way. So it sort of feels like it will just keep coming in some respects.
Yeah, here's another big difference from when I first started, though. So now you've got these companies, and they've raised, you know, humongous amounts of money, and they sort of have these big brand deals where they have tons and tons of capital, and they're hiring up all this emerging talent.
Sure, right.
So now these kids who are sort of like figuring out Roblox and finding their footing on the platform, rather than sort of like taking a stab at making a game, you know, which is risky and might and probably will end up failing, but that's what you got to do to sort of figure it out. Those guys have been soaked up sort of like a sponge into these companies. So I do wonder if a lot of the emerging talent, which is great though, because they're earning good money and they're
and it's more stable, you know, than the high risk world that you came up in.
Yeah. So there's not necessarily like tons and tons. Yeah, it hasn't scaled up one to one because a lot of them are sort of like falling into that. But yeah, I imagine I bet you there are some other like Kiwi developers who are really killing it right now that maybe I'm just not aware of.
Yeah, how did you find the other your flatmates and the dude in Nelson and so on?
Flatmates I actually knew before I started making games. So we all played Roblox together, and I didn't know them in person. They knew each other, but we met online and we all used to play. And then we all transitioned to making games around the same time, and then we all made a game together which did really well called Mall Tycoon. Yeah, and the other guy, the guy, he lives in Nelson, he reached out to me. At the time, he hadn't really made anything that big, so neither of us had really succeeded at the level we have now. Yeah, and so we just used to talk about game design, and we'd help each other out with projects and things, and I was messaging him this morning. We still talk constantly about game design stuff, and yeah, he's a very driven guy. I think that he's going to continue to, his company will grow and grow and grow. I think he's very ambitious, yeah.
Amazing. Hey, thank you so much, Alec, for this has been like such a fascinating window into this sort of hidden but massive world. And yeah, I've really appreciated you coming up on the fold to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I hope I've painted a picture of what Roblox is like. It's sort of hard, you know, being so familiar with the community and trying to sort of explain that to So I guess
civilians kind of thing.
Yeah, right. I don't know if I've done a great job, but I hope, you know, you guys have sort of understood what's going on in Roblox a little bit.
Yeah, no, you definitely have. Anyway, thank you so much for coming up.
Yeah, cheers.
That was The Fold, brought to you by our partners at oMedia, making brands unmissable and public spaces better across Aotearoa. Huge thanks to oMedia for sponsoring this episode of The Fold and enabling us to make unmissable connections with Kiwis.
Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. The Spin-off Podcast Network.